This webcast is made possible by the listener members of the Classical Network and WWFM.org. Thank you for your support. Jacobs Music Company is the proud sponsor of Between the Keys with Jed Distler. Information on any of the products or services that Jacobs Music offers is available on their website, www.jacobsmusic.com. Welcome to Between the Keys. My name is Jed Distler. I'm the artist in residence for the Classical Network. We had a really superb response to our episode a while back featuring composers at the piano. So I thought it would be a good idea to put another episode of composer pianists together. After all, it's kind of an inexhaustible topic. We have quite a range of music this hour and some really rare treasures, such as the first recording that Igor Stravinsky made as a pianist. It was recorded around 1925 for the Brunswick label. I think he recorded it in the United States. I'm not sure. And it was released for the first time, courtesy of Pristine Classical. And we're going to hear Stravinsky play three selections from his piece, The Five Fingers. Let's listen. Igor Stravinsky at the piano. That was from an unpublished 1925 recording made for the Brunswick label, only just recently released for the very first time by Pristine Classical. Stravinsky played three pieces from his suite, The Five Fingers. We heard numbers 1, 5, and 2. And they're very simple pieces, yet I think that Stravinsky plays them with real artistry and care. If you listen to Between the Keys on a more or less regular basis, you probably know that I bring up the name Frederick Shevsky a lot, who was a dear friend and mentor and a wonderful composer pianist. He's an American composer who lives in Brussels. We have several selections from his cycle of piano pieces called The Road, which is a very extensive work in 8 sections, and each section is divided into miles. So that's 64 miles on the proverbial road. It encompasses about 10 hours of music, possibly more, and I kind of look at it as a kind of novel for the piano, something that you just sit down and you can play it in your own time, at your leisure. You're not supposed to listen to the entire thing in one sitting. So here's mile number 14 from part 2 of Frederick Shevsky's The Road. The composer is at the piano. Music by Frederick Shevsky with the composer at the piano. That was mile number 14 from part 2 of his magnum piano opus titled The Road. And you heard Frederick Shevsky whistling as well as playing the piano. One of the great masters of the novelty piano genre was a woman named Pauline Alpert, and she wrote and recorded a lot of wonderful arrangements of popular songs from the 20s, 30s, and 40s. And she even did popularized versions of classical favorites. Here is Pauline Alpert playing one of her original compositions. This is something called Piano Poker. That was pianist Pauline Alpert performing her own composition called Piano Poker. And that recording comes from an anthology issued about, I guess, 25 years ago on the Pearl label. And the collection is called Keyboard Wizards of the Gershwin Era. I don't think this set is available anymore, but it's well, well worth hunting down. Robert Musinski, who lived from 1929 until 2010, is a great example of a composer-pianist that you could always depend upon for consistency and craftsmanship, and for creating piano works that were always idiomatic and effective. And I think that many of them have really stood the test of time, such as his third piano sonata, from which we are going to hear the composer himself at the piano play the third movement, which starts off as an andante sostenuto before launching into this exuberant allegro. Robert Musinski at the piano.
Thank you.
Music by Robert Musinski. That was the final movement from his Piano Sonata No. 3. The composer was at the piano. One of the oldest born composers to have made piano recordings was none other than Camille Saint-Saëns. He was born in 1835, and I think he began recording in 1904. And even through the faded sonics, you will definitely be able to hear this 69-year-old composer's amazing keyboard agility and what natural and effortless technique he still had. So let's listen to Saint-Saëns play his own Rhapsodie d'Auvergne, Opus 73. Camille Saint-Saëns at the piano in 1904, when he was 69 years young, playing his own Rhapsodie d'Auvergne. What a fantastic artifact that is. We return now to Frédéric Jevski and his magnum opus for the piano, The Road. Thank you. Fredrik Jevski performing Mile Number 17 from The Road Part 3. As I said before, The Road I consider to be Jevski's magnum opus for the piano in terms of its size and scope. It's a work that encompasses maybe 10 hours, I think even more, of music, covering an incredible range of expression and techniques. And if you're a pianist who wants to explore new music, I think most of Jevski's piano works can be found on IMSLP. What is that site? The IMSLP online. Definitely look it up. So we are exploring composers at the piano here on Between the Keys this hour, and I'm your host, Jed Distler. I'm not going to announce this next selection, except to say that the composer is not only playing his music, but he is singing it as well.
There's a time in many a life when it's due to face it death, but our soldier boy will do their part that people can live in a world where all will have the same. Their conscience always of their country's aim, which is liberty for all. Hip hip hooray, you'll hear them say as they go to the fight and front. Brave boys are now in action. They are there, they will help to free the world. They are fighting for the right, but when it comes to might, they are there, they are there, they are there. The death deep as the allies beat up all of our hearts. The boys be there, fighting hard, and then the world will shout the battle cry of freedom, chanting on a new campground. Chanting tonight, chanting on a new campground. For this rally round the flag of the people's new free world, shouting the battle cry of freedom. When we're through this cursed war, all started by sneaking culture, making slaves of men, goddamn him, then let all the people rise and stand together and pray. Kind humanity, most wars are made by small, stupid, selfish boys and groups, while the people have no say. But there'll come a day, hip hip hooray, when they'll smash all dictators to the wall. Then it's build a people's world nation, hooray, every honest country free to live his own native life. They will stand for the right, but when it comes to might, they'll be there, they'll be there, they'll be there, you can't believe. Then the people, not just politicians, will rule their own lands and lives, and you'll hear the whole universe shouting the battle cry of freedom, chanting on a new campground. Chanting tonight, chanting on a new campground. For us rally round the flag of the people's new free world, shouting the battle cry of freedom.
That was Charles Ives, believe it or not, in a private recording from, I think, the early 1940s. He is playing and singing his song called They Are There. And really, what incredible energy Charles Ives brings to his own music. And as a singer, he certainly gets the point across, that's for sure. One of my favorite composers and pianists in jazz is Stanley Cowell. I think he's somebody who's very, very underrated. And when Stanley Cowell was still a student at Oberlin in the late 1950s, he wrote this beautiful piece in tribute to his piano teacher, Emil Dannenberg. And the title of this piece is simply called Emil Dannenberg. Let's listen to it.
Thank you.
pianist Stanley Cowell performing his composition Emil Dannenberg, which he wrote while still a student at Oberlin. I think he wrote that in 1959, and it was written in tribute to his teacher, Emil Dannenberg. Well, at the top of the program, I promised some real rarities, and I have a great surprise for you now. It's a recording that was discovered rather recently, and it's an informal recording where Sergei Rachmaninoff demonstrates his newly composed symphonic dances at the piano, and we hear him spontaneously reducing it from the orchestral score. And you hear him playing and gesticulating, sometimes he's singing and stomping. And he was playing this for Eugene Ormandy, the conductor, just weeks before he led its world premiere with the Philadelphia Orchestra. I think that this recording was made most likely without Rachmaninoff's knowledge. And you'll hear that the sound quality is not great, but you still really get a sense of Rachmaninoff's big sound and a kind of freedom and spontaneity that reveals a very different side of Rachmaninoff than the, let's say, the meticulous perfectionist that we hear in his studio recordings. So let's listen to a good portion of the central waltz movement from the Symphonic Dances by Rachmaninoff with Rachmaninoff at the piano.
Thank you.
We have been listening to an excerpt from a newly discovered informal recording that is about 32 minutes long, where Sergei Rachmaninoff plays through most of his newly composed symphonic dances for orchestra. He's playing it on the piano and reducing it from the orchestral score. And apparently in this recording, he was demonstrating the piece to Eugene Ormandy, who would conduct the premiere with the Philadelphia Orchestra just a few weeks later. And this recording was recently discovered in the Ormandy collection at the University of Pennsylvania, and it's recently been released on the Marston label in a wonderful box set with beautiful documentation. And needless to say, this is quite a historic document. Another composer and pianist whose keyboard style always suggests that an orchestra is looming in the background was the great American pioneering jazz composer Ferdinand Joseph Lamont, who is better known as Jelly Roll Morton. And in this 1939 recording I'm going to share with you now of his composition King Porter Stomp, you hear wonderful counter melodies and left-hand syncopations, and all I can say is that this is a fun piece to listen to, and as you're listening to it, you'll realize that maybe it's not so easy to play. Jelly Roll Morton. That was King Porter Stomp, a classic Jelly Roll Morton composition with the composer at the piano. That's a recording from 1939. We are going to conclude the program with a small piano concerto by Joseph Fenimore. And before Joseph Fenimore exclusively devoted himself to composition, he was active as a pianist. Oh, he was a wonderful pianist. And I just recently reconnected with his delightful three-movement concerto piccolo for piano and orchestra. It's, I think, 10 minutes worth of sparkle and wit and sheer invention. And it's quite an amazingly assured work for a composer who was 21 or 22 at the time that he wrote it. But let's listen to all three movements. Joseph Fenimore is at the piano. We hear the Royal Philharmonic with Paul Freeman conducting. Thank you. We just heard the Concerto Piccolo in three movements by Joseph Fenimore with the composer at the piano and Paul Freeman conducting the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra. That composition was from 1962 when Joseph Fenimore, I think, was either 21 or 22 years old. What a wonderful, wonderful work. I think we have time for an encore. How about a little music box piece by Ignaz Friedman? Tabatière et Musique. That's a piece composed and performed by the great romantic piano legend Ignaz Friedman. And that brings this program of Composers at the Piano to a close. We certainly have covered a lot of ground, from Joseph Fenimore to Jelly Roll Morton, from Saint-Saëns to Shevsky, and then we heard that newly uncovered Rachmaninoff recording with Rachmaninoff demonstrating his symphonic dances. We really heard a lot. This is Jed Distler, artist in residence for the Classical Network, and I hope that we are going to be together again next week at this time for Between the Keys. This program is sponsored by Jacobs Music and is an exclusive production of both the Classical Network and WWFM.org. Have a good week and take care of yourself. Bye-bye.